This is Courage to Resist, bringing you the voices of the troops who refused to fight. Mathis Chereau joined the Army at the age of 18 in 2002 because he wanted to get money for college. He trained as a journalist and spent more than 4 years writing for Army publications. After he was honorably discharged, Chereau went to New York and eventually enrolled in Brooklyn College. Soon after that, he was notified that he was being recalled to the military and would be sent to Iraq. He made the decision that he would refuse deployment and announced that decision in mid-May. He is due to deploy on June 15, 2008. Mathis Chereau is speaking with Courage to Resist from Washington, D.C., where he will be meeting with various members of Congress. Mathis, thanks so much for talking with Courage to Resist.
Well, thank you for speaking with me.
We want to hear your story from the beginning, so why don't you tell us about when and why you enlisted in the military in the first place?
Well, I enlisted in the military immediately following high school. I did very poorly in high school as a result of being a very depressed young man. And I graduated high school with a 2.1. My family was broke and could not afford to support me going to school or me figuring out how to go to school after high school. So I enlisted in the military as a way to bridge an uncrossable gap that I saw in my life from, you know, post-high school poverty and mediocrity to actually having a shot at going to school and making a career for myself in some type of profession. And the military was offering me money for college as well. They were offering me a chance to learn journalism, learn writing and photography, and travel the world a little bit. So it seemed like a very, you know, very good option for me as I didn't have too many others.
What year was that?
That was 2002. That I enlisted in June of 2002 and shipped out to basic training August 1st, 2002. And I was there for 10 weeks before going on to Fort Meade to do my journalism school at the Defense Information School.
They actually lived up to their promise to you and they sent you to journalism school.
They did, yes. I completed basic training and I went on to journalism school. And I graduated, and my first duty station was Camp Zama, Japan, where I worked for a weekly newspaper.
Now you enlisted in 2002 after the attacks in New York and Washington and with U.S. troops in Afghanistan. When you joined up, did you imagine participating in combat against those who attacked the U.S.? Did the thought of going to war enter your mind at all when you enlisted?
Not so much. I didn't enlist to, quote-unquote, fight the terrorists or anything that seemed, you know, patriotic to the majority of Americans at the time. I enlisted because of the opportunity I saw the military offering me. And I didn't really honestly think that going to war was much of a reality or a possibility. I knew we were in Afghanistan. I saw the occupation of Afghanistan winding down. By the time I enlisted, we had pretty much successfully deposed the Taliban and were more or less occupying the country. And it seemed to me at the time like it was just a matter of that winding down and things going back to normal. It wasn't actually until the week that I got out of basic training and I got to my my journalism school at Fort Meade that I regained the privilege of being able to watch the news. And I realized that while I was in training, there had been a lot of rumbling about possible war with Iraq. And the idea of actually going to war was quite frightening to me as a young man, especially to Iraq, which even then I thought of as likely not having much to do with the war on terrorism. But I just kind of resigned myself to the fact that the one way or the other, regardless of my personal feelings, the Army pretty much owned me for the next 4.5 years, and that I needed to quickly figure out a way to button it up and toe the line, as they say in the military, and figure out how I was going to survive for 4.5 years and not go crazy or not be blown to bits.
So you did have some differences of opinion and some misgivings about U.S. military and foreign policy.
Absolutely. I remember I was still in journalism school when we invaded Iraq, and as I often say, I remember watching the television and feeling completely shocked and awed as I watched the initial stages of the shocking and awing of the Iraqi people, and wondering how, one, I had gotten myself into this whole mess, and two, how or whether or not I would be forced to deploy to Iraq and support that occupation, how I was going to do that. So.
Now, after journalism school, you went to Japan. Tell me again, how long were you there?
Well, I was stationed in Japan for 2 years, during which time I worked for the Tory newspaper. About the only exotic place I ever went to while I was stationed in Japan was the Philippines. I deployed there for about 3 weeks in support of a bilateral training mission being conducted with the Filipino Army called Balikatan, and I believe that was in 05. And there we participated, or I participated in documenting medical exercises mostly, U.S. and Filipino troops providing free health care to folks out in the countryside and the provinces. And, I mean, I have to say, that mission was quite rewarding to me. I saw, you know, U.S. military members working with military members from other countries to do what seemed like a very good and honorable thing, which was take care of people who otherwise wouldn't be taken care of if it wasn't for our presence. So that kind of repaired, you know, my disillusionment a little bit. I felt like, okay, obviously the U.S. military does do some good in the world, and we're not just out there to kill people, but we're out there to help people. And I went back to Japan and finished out my time at Camp Zama, at which time they sent me to work for the four-star general in charge of U.S. Army Europe, which was General Bibi Bell at the time. And I worked in his command information department, helping to produce, edit, design, and lay out Your Army Magazine, which was their quarterly publication in the interests of U.S. Army Europe, where we were publishing stories designed to leave people all over the world. We were told actually our target audience was the people in D.C., the Congress, the President, and the like, to leave them with a good taste of U.S. Army Europe and maybe even a desire to give us more money. So that was my mission there. And while I was in Europe, I traveled all around the continent there, and I also went to Afghanistan once to produce the story about U.S. military members from Hohenfels, Germany, who were actually part of a what was thought of as a non-deployable training unit. They were being deployed to Afghanistan to assist with security in the first parliamentary elections under the direct command of a Romanian battalion, the Red Scorpions. And so I did that story, and I came back to Germany, and that was actually very on in my tour there. I spent about another year and a half in Germany.
As a journalist in the Army, you must have had the chance to talk to lots and lots of soldiers. Did you hear much opposition among the troops to the ongoing wars in Iraq and Afghanistan?
I heard tons of opposition to the war in Iraq, and, you know, I did from the very start. But like me, most of these people believed that their personal feelings about the mission were irrelevant to their duties as soldiers, and that one way or the other, they would have to continue supporting the mission. So, you know, there was talk about the immorality of the Iraq occupation. There was talk about the pointlessness of it. But there was never much talk about actually standing against it, because most everybody had it trained into them that, well, it wasn't their job and it wasn't their business to be standing for or against any of this, that we were simply paid by the government to follow orders, and that anything beyond that was outside of our lane, as they say in the military, and that we weren't there to address policy. We were simply there to carry out orders.
After Europe, where'd you go?
After Europe, I went to Brooklyn, New York. I got out of the military.
So Europe was your last assignment. Now, you had a brief visit to Afghanistan. Tell me what you saw when you were in Afghanistan.
Well, while I was in Afghanistan, I saw poverty deeper than I'd ever seen it any other place. I saw, you know, U.S. military folks clustered on bases, you know, seemingly clinging to routine to kill the time and to pass the time until they could be redeployed back to their home stations, which seemed to be the only thing that anybody cared about. I saw fields of poppies and marijuana being grown by the local populations. In fact, going into one of the bases, I've got a great photograph of it, actually, of three kids who were trying to sell me hashish through the window of the Humvee I was riding in into Bagram Air Base. And I always thought that was kind of interesting that here was, you know, here we were. I thought we were there. I saw us being there as an attempt to liberate the local population from the control of the warlords who mostly profited through opium production. And I saw that apparently still rampant. And, you know, I saw the products of that being offered to U.S. service members. And it kind of made me think about stories that I'd heard from Vietnam. It kind of made me wonder, you know, I certainly didn't purchase any drugs from these kids, but it made me wonder if they are offering, then somebody must be buying. I wasn't really there for all that long. My combat experience in the military was very limited. It was actually limited to that, and I never fired or took a round from any enemy combatant.
You mentioned Bagram. There's a notorious detention center there, among other things. Did you have any encounters related to the detainees in that place?
No, I didn't. I toured an up-armoring Humvee facility where they were welding giant plates on the sides of Humvees to make them armored. And I spent most of my time with the four-star general, actually, while I was there. So we were greeted to a nice and rosy tour of all the wonderful things that were going on, none of which included the prison there at Bagram. Though, I have to say, I just thought about it. Kind of a startling moment while I was there was actually when I was with this unit from Hohenfels, Germany. I actually witnessed when they told the General B.B. Bell at the time, that only about half of the turrets in their Humvees worked, that the other half were rusted to the point that they couldn't rotate the weapons on top of the vehicles, and that really they were just riding around for show. Were they to come under any kind of attack, they would be completely unprepared to respond. They would have to basically turn these vehicles on the wheels to aim. They couldn't twist these turrets around. And the young soldiers of this unit were telling the general about this, and the general was extremely upset and immediately got on a satellite phone and called back to Germany and chewed out one of his guys back there and asked him, hey, why do I have soldiers on the ground, you know, underneath the control of this Romanian battalion, and their gun turrets don't even work? And basically, I want somebody here fixing these things within 24 hours or you're fired. And from what I heard, that happened. I left the next day before the inspectors from Bagram showed up. But, I saw this as very productive. I saw, you know, okay, this unit has a problem. Their weapons don't work, and they just told the general about it, and now they're going to get fixed. And what ended up happening was all of these troops got chewed out by their first sergeant and their commanding officer for being whiners and making the unit look bad in front of the general. And I think about that specific scenario, I think about that specific situation, and I think about all of the other failures in the wars that this country prosecutes overseas for important, pertinent information to get passed up the chain, you know, documenting failure and documenting deficiency, these things being failed to be reported up the chain for fear of, I guess, looking bad in front of their superiors, for fear of making their commanders and first sergeants look bad in front of superiors, which would in turn lead to the lives of the soldiers at the lowest echelon to be quite unhappy.
But it sounds as if when they don't say anything about these kinds of problems, like equipment that doesn't function the way it's supposed to, then their lives are in more danger.
I mean, that's one of the things that my fellow Iraq veterans against the war are often testifying about, is the fact that all of these bad things were going on, but people were failing to report them up the chain because they were afraid of looking bad. They were afraid of being, you know, scrutinized as possibly deficient or defective soldiers, as part of deficient or defective units, and that was somehow their fault, and they should feel shamed about that and keep it quiet for the sake of unit cohesion and putting on good appearances for the world and for their commanders.
We hear a lot of stories like that.
You hear them at Winter Soldier testimonies. Yeah. I hear them just hanging out with my friends in IVAW, and I mean it's across the board. It's not just what I experienced on that one afternoon in Afghanistan. I mean, it's every day in every conflict that we participate in all over the world.
This is the end of part one of a Courage to Resist interview with GI Resister Matthew Chereau.